Welcome. Welcome, listeners. To time for an awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, new media for the new millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states our people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom, and with all that getting, get an understanding. Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to timeforawakening.com. That's timeforanawakening.com and listen to the live stream from the home page. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and listen to the live stream from that location. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your carry-around devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, after you downloaded it, type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon. And you can stream the program live, even into your car. It's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. That's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. And that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And before you leave that page, do me a favor and hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook. And Time for Awakening Media, the homepage, is out there. Should be one of your favorites, too. If not, make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. There you'll see more interesting content on podcasts, blogs, or the programs that you can download. Listen at later times, even share with your friends. So again, make that one of your favorites and put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're in open form. It's Friday here in the city of Philadelphia, and we're in Freestyle Friday, so to speak. Open form. Anything that's on your mind, give us a call. We'll talk about it. And we'll be right back to get things started after a brief word from our sponsors.
You are tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
Antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. Sundays, 7 p.m., with your host, Elliot.
Welcome back. It's a time for an awakening. And before we get started with the program this evening, I want to welcome in the co-hosts, and, Philadelphia activists, tour guide at African American Museum here in Philadelphia. Brother Richard is with us. Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, brother.
How are you?
How's it going?
Yeah, boy, they got the butter from the duck today. I'm a little beat.
But that means that the communal aspect of wealth building took a showed itself and blessed you and gave you another day of prosperity that all of us can be able to mirror and reflect.
Yeah. Okay. I'll let you tell it.
Hey, you said we just worked you today.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, but it's always look forward to Fridays and Sundays when we can kind of get on here and share information, talk with the listeners, see what's going on, take the pulse of our communities, and just speak about some issues, man.
Yeah, it's definitely, I enjoy and I appreciate the opportunity to be able to share. And, you know, as you say, you know, also saying as far as continuing to learn, you know, one thing I like about this format more than the commercial formats that I've had the opportunity to listen to is that it's a little bit more open. So the points of views and the thoughts can have a little bit more time to develop themselves. We don't all have to agree, but we do get the time, the chance to expand and let people see our full breadth of thinking and how we came to our conclusion, whether we agree with it or not. So I, you know, this forum, I looked forward to, especially, and I like the way you phrased it. Free-flowing? No.
Yeah, what did I say? Freestyle Friday.
Freestyle Friday. Because, you know, I think that that's, you know, it's apropos that, and I hope the listening audience recognize that, you know, like, you can call in from anywhere in this time and bring up anything and it, see how it kind of fits and flows between us. And it's exchanging information. I've gathered a lot of information over the short time I've been here.
Yeah, you know, we're supposed to have a...
not doing that bad, you know. It's just having fun. It's going to be fun. I'm psyched. I'm fired up.
Joe, I want to thank you for informing the audience. We're going to be teaming up doing some things in the future. I was talking to Richard about some of the things we're going to be doing.
Yes, we are.
So we'll get it together.
All right, brother.
Hey, listen, thanks before you leave, Joe, tell me something. Because there was a customer of mine that I haven't seen him in years. He was a fantastic jazz flautist here from the city, Walter Bell. Is he still around? Where's Walter?
I think he's still around. I haven't heard about him performing much, but I think he's still around. When I first started playing on my birthday, it was like I've been only playing for a few months. On my birthday, I went to his gig, and he let me sit in with him. That was like, you know, that's my Walter Bell story.
Oh, wow.
You know, he let me sit in with him. And I hit it. I did something. The drum got out of my hand. You know, I'd only been playing for a few months, and he was kind enough to let me play on my birthday. I took one drum down. He was playing down Hibachi.
Okay,
I think downtown. Yeah, but Yeah, but thank you for the giving me a shot, you know, and talk about the event, and I appreciate it. Thank you for your support. I appreciate you, brothers, and we will be working together hopefully soon.
Joe, I'll talk to you soon, man. And I'm going to let you.
Yeah, tomorrow. I need a haircut, Elliot. I need a haircut.
Joe, I'll talk to you. It's just, hey, Elliot, Joe, it's just, I mean, I'm hoping that our listening audience around the country, around the world, recognize what is happening here. Just in our, in this dialogue, because the networking amongst Black people is occurring to reinforce this culture and commerce. It's like really important for us to see that it's going on all the time. And as you say, Joe, it has to be magnified, but it won't be magnified by somebody else. It has to be magnified by us. And the core of that is the network.
That's because right. We don't have only the relationships as your network.
We don't realize what different skills and crafts we can pull together to make something bigger. And jazz is about that, right? Make something
absolutely,
bigger.
Absolutely, yes. It has to start with jazz. It gets started with music or our culture. We have the greatest culture in the world, to me. Everybody copies our stuff. It's like oil. Like, you find an oil in the ground. Black culture, typically Black American culture, but African culture is the best in the world. The Japanese, they love it. I talk to musicians who go to play in Japan, and they know everything. They know all the music. They love it in Europe. And I had a guy from Bulgaria come to my job. And the only thing we talked, and he couldn't speak English, and I couldn't speak whatever he speaks in Bulgaria. And the only thing he could say was, we talk, if he liked that, oh, jazz, yes. He just said, Louis Armstrong, Lionel Hampton. Sarah Vaughan. That's the only English he knew. was jazz musician. The first thing he said to me was Louis Armstrong, Dizzy Gillespie. That's all he could. That's the only English he knew. He was from Bulgaria. It was the funniest thing. So, you know, everybody is listening to us. Warren Evans is over in Europe right now. I try to hire this other woman for something, a jazz singer. She's in Poland, and we don't appreciate us, ourselves, as a people. We need to look in the mirror and just start, to me, loving ourselves, loving our culture, loving who we are, and start protecting what God, the gift that God has given us.
Joe,
we can't lose.
I'm going to let you take us into this break, man, and I'll be talking to you soon.
All right. I'll see you tomorrow, brother.
All right, then. We'll be right back. And we'll be in open forum.
Thank you.
We're going to let Brother Joe Harrison take us into this break. We'll be right back.
Tuned in to the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts and live program scheduling, visit us on the web at blacktalkradionetwork.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
The
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Welcome back. It's time for an awakening. We're in open forum. It's Friday evening in the city of Philadelphia. And what we call Freestyle Friday. Any issues on your mind, give us a call. The lines are open. 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. I want to thank Brother Joe Harrison for being with us this evening to talk about the event coming up on October the 7th over there at Kenan Baptist Church, the jazz concert, many artists, vendors, food. That's what it's all about, Richard. You know,
yes.
that same weekend is the Locks Conference. The good thing about it, Joe's event is early, and the Locks Conference will be going on all day Saturday and Sunday. So if people do go to Joe's event, they could still have time afterwards to come down to the Locks Conference.
And Elliot, that means those in the listening audience, at least from Boston to D.C. I would push from Virginia. Okay, from Boston, y'all who are listening to us, from Boston to D.C., you can come to Philly and be totally immersed in African culture and spirituality and rhythm and vibe, but more importantly, with great people from Philadelphia. So it's these two events that's going on that you really can be able to we can now continue that networking process, because that's where political power is coming in at, Ellie, to me, as I see it. And our culture is, as Brother Joe was saying, it's par excellence around the world. And we should utilize that to help us in our networking, not just networking for our personal enjoyment, but for our political aspect, for our economic aspect, for our social relationship, for our health.
Yeah, Well, you said a mouthful, Brother Richard. Again, we're in open forum. Several issues going on out here. And I, you know what, Richard, I want to talk about a few things. And, you know, the callers can get involved and talk about whatever they want. But I want to talk about some news stories and talk about the slant on the news stories being put, or the focus of these stories being controlled by someone else. You know, I want to talk about this kneeling that they've been doing in the NFL. And I guess to piggyback that, because I see someone else controlling the paradigm of what's going on. It wasn't like that at the beginning, but it's turning that way now. I want to see how you feel in reference to that, Brother Richard. But first, let me talk about, because it's in the news now about Puerto Rico being hit by this last hurricane. I think it was Maria.
Yeah.
And the island had been devastated, powers out and things of that nature. And it talked about Trump not sending aid or slow to send aid. Some of the Congress people told not to go there, things of that nature. And you know, other people, Hispanics here in the States, getting involved to send aid to their families on the island of Puerto Rico. And, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But it's something that happened before that black folks don't seem to be talking about. Because I hear a lot of black folks, and it was in some black media, talking about the situation in Puerto Rico. I think one of the hip-hop artists, Jay-Z, or one of them, gave another hip-hop artist, Fat Joe, I think he's Puerto Rican, gave him all types of millions of dollars in aid or whatever to send to the island, or some financial help to send to the island. But, Richard, I want to say that St. Thomas, now my maternal great-grandparents were from St. Thomas. They came here by way of Ellis Island in the early part of this century, the turn of this century, not this century, I'm sorry, the early part of the 1900s. They came here with a white family. They were sponsored by the white family to come here because they were domestics and worked for these people. I never forget my mother showing me the document, because she kept it, showing the documents where they came through Ellis Island. But they weren't like some of these others that came through Ellis Island. They came here because they were sponsored by the whites that they worked for as domestics. But they came from St. Thomas. Now, St. Thomas, St. John, and St. Croix, that are part of the African diaspora, all our people all down in those islands were devastated by two hurricanes. I'm more than sure Harvey hit them before it hit Houston. And then the same hurricane that tore up Puerto Rico hit the islands again, devastated those islands. You don't hear anything about it in the news. And black people are not talking about it. Listen, I don't give a damn. I don't want to hear about Puerto Rico. I don't want to hear about Puerto Rico. What about St. Thomas, St. Croix, and St. John? And they're supposed to be U.S. territories along with Puerto Rico. Those islands were devastated. Anybody can go online, look at some of the footage before those hurricanes, and look at some of the footage in the areas afterwards in all three of those islands. Looked like somebody threw a bomb. I mean, it was a lot of those places have been totally destroyed. But, I mean, where's the only person I heard even talk about it as far as these media types was the basketball player that used to play for San Antonio, Tim Duncan, because he's from St. Thomas. And he was talking about sending aid. But I don't hear even black celebrities or black people with means even spearheading some drives among the community to send aid to St. Thomas, St. John, and St. Croix. I don't hear it. We got to stop letting other people control. We're not marionettes. Control what we say, what we do. Set the parameters of how we think. We need to adopt it, just like we said at the beginning of the program. Our people need to adopt a new paradigm. We don't need white folks telling. Listen, Dr. Rogers of the Black Reality Think Tank that's going to be coming on Time for Awakening mentioned a couple of weeks ago when he was guest on the program about a plantation mentality that white folks always use since our forefathers first came here. They use a plantation mentality deal, and it's still here now. Whatever you do, they want to set the parameters on how you do it. That is approved by them. And that kind of dovetails into this conversation dealing with this kneeling. Now, Richard, talk about it from your perspective before I wait.
Elliot, this, I mean, and me not, it's just interesting for those of us, and I assume there is some who, you know, haven't been engaged in, you know, love sports, but haven't been engaged in the actual watching of sports on a regular basis. And this from Kaepernick to now has really, you know, brought me to at least become more aware of the owners, but the politics of this, because it's just interesting how this thing is expanding, right? Now, Elliot, I have to say, and I don't know if it's because I'm just skeptical or whatever, I'm raising a question from a question I don't have an answer for from a documentation. And you did said that you, in talking to you about it, in the sense of, because we, at one point during the summer, towards the end of the summer, there was discussion of whether there was going to be a boycott of watching the NFL as it got closer and closer. The cabinet wasn't going to get picked up, right? You know, and that's money, right? So I don't know how that played out. But, you know, we're in America. And to me, you know, out of my cynicism, everything revolves around money. And it seems to me they wouldn't want to lose one of their staunchest, maybe not supporting ticket sales, but staunchest viewership as far as a black consumer watching national sports, particularly the three major ones or the two major ones, basketball and football, and in this case, football. And that a lot of black people, a lot of the young black people had aligned with Kaepernick around his stance. And the stance, as we all know, was about the shooting. Now, I don't know what they done took this to, because I done heard about the flag. Was the flag really the issue? Was the state, what's that, state doing the, what's that, the Pledge of Allegiance? Was that the issue that Kaepernick actually put on the political stage? And when you talk about the manipulation, didn't it move from about black men being killed and not being, and black people not being equally justified, just provide equal justice under the law? Really what his positioning political symbol was in saying that he wouldn't actually stand up and pledge allegiance to the flag? Wasn't that really what it was about? How did it get solely to just about the pledging allegiance? And now, not even talking about that, just we kneel. We just kneeling, right? We locking arms and kneeling. What I thought the money was about is here. And Trump, we know Trump is the master. Number 45 is the master of marketing and imagery. And we know that those, I mean, they even said it. Those owners of those teams said that they supported Trump with millions of, I mean, they're bragging, basically. They supported him with millions of dollars while they're on their knees locking arms. And we all, black people, saying that if you ain't about the 1%, they're saying that Trump was about hurting black people, hurting them in their health care, hurting those people who other kind of services that, you know, whether it be the taxes, that Trump was about that. And those owners was saying, obviously, during the election, that's our man. And we're giving him $1 million to run. Run, Trump, run. But now, when they might lose some money, they down on their knees, locking like, I don't want to lose that viewership. And Trump, all he had to say, y'all fire if they get on their knees. So that's, hopefully I was clear that the way it comes out to me, that it may have been, when you talk about manipulation, Elliot, it may have been between the president and the billionaire owners, and there was a dissension within the players. Oh, he shouldn't just be making no political stance. He should just play ball. I even heard that.
But well, I mean, it seems as though, and not it seems as though, you see, because when Kaepernick first started doing this, he mentioned what it was for.
Mm-hmm.
All these killings of unarmed black people all across the country. And he said that he wasn't going to stand for a flag that represents this type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you only had a few players, a handful of players all around the league that did it along with him. And it wasn't, it would be different if it was a player on each team. It wasn't even a player on each team that was doing it. You had a handful, maybe two fistfuls of players that was doing it along with him for the reasons that he was doing it.
Right.
So at the end of the season, the league get together and say, okay, we'll show this N-word. We won't hire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this will be a message to others. Don't do it. So now, because Donald Trump gets in Alabama and says something to his constituents down there.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, black players want to lock arms and get on their knees with white players. Ray Lewis, the black guy that's been dumping on Kaepernick the whole time, he goes down there with Ravens. He's on his knees. Now, I mean, other black players, if they had any type of sense of the issues, they would say, like, man, what the hell? Come on, I'm not locking arms with you. Would he have some type of epiphany about what was he down there for?
Mm.
And why are they locking arms? Listen, 90% and probably higher than that, I'd like to say 100% of those whites that's playing football, number one, they're millionaires. 100% of them whites playing football, and are definitely 100% of those owners and managers are Republican and supported Trump, along with your big ticket white players like Tom Brady and all of them. They're all Trump supporters. What the hell are black players locking arms with them for? Jerry Jones, all those owners, Jack Kraft, the one that owned the Patriots, he's locking arms kneeling with black players. And the thing is, they're locking arms kneeling, and with when arms locked, with their hands still over their heart, and they mouthing the words of an anthem.
That was supposed
to be a national response to Trump's comments. Not dealing with Kaepernick seemed to be an afterthought now. They're not even mentioning it. That was in response to Trump. CBC, the National Black Caucus, they got on their knees in Congress. Now, them, of all people, shouldn't be on their knees at all. But they was down on their knees for the same thing.
Well, wait a minute now, Elliot. Remember, they laid down at another point, wasn't they? Didn't they have a session when
they was on the floor. They stay on the floor down there. They was on the floor singing We Shall Overcome. I mean, yeah, they were. And one of the callers, his favorite person, was leading that parade, John Lewis. He was down there, and this was only about 6, 8, 7 months ago. They just was on the floor about We Shall Overcome. Now they're on the floor again about Trump.
On their knees.
Somebody ought to went behind a few of them and kicked them straight in the butt while they down there talking about someone on some knees in reference to Trump. Get off your knees and help your people. Come up with some solutions to get these people off our back, period. That's your job as supposed to be as a black lawmaker. Help your people. Everybody else does it. But when some of our people get in office, I represent all the people. This thing, the lost sense of Colin Kaepernick and why he did it.
Right.
All of a sudden, they're doing it in reference to Trump. Now, I understand on that Thursday game, they didn't even do it. Nobody was on their knees. So now it's off the table. And it's kind of funny, the fire chief, I don't know whether you saw the story. It's a fire chief out there in Pittsburgh. Because they were, I think it was maybe the only team that didn't even come out on the field for the anthem.
Oh, yeah.
So the fire chief said that he used to have respect for Mike Tomlin, who was the black coach for Pittsburgh. He said, I used to have respect for Mike Tomlin. Now he's just another nigger. So all of a sudden, he was under fire, and I think he was fired.
Was he? I didn't hear
that part. The fire chief was fired for the comments.
Oh, okay.
But you know what that means. He's fired. He'll either get his job back in arbitration, or he'll go to some other municipality and get another job as fire chief. That's how white supremacy goes. They take care of their own.
With that said, wasn't it a woman down in, was that Virginia or Washington? She was. She said she put something on the internet about black people. They fired her, and then they brought her back.
Well, that's how it goes, Richard. You know that. That's why we can't put no stock. As soon as some of these people, especially the police captains and all, that made racist statements. Here, this fire chieftain made a racist statement in reference to Tomlin, and immediately he's fired. That means nothing. Because if you follow the breadcrumbs, like I said, he'll either get his job back through arbitration after that one of them unions get involved, or he'll go to another municipality and be a fire chief again.
And that goes to that point of what you were making as far as because it's one thing for us when we look at the politicians and others in the media, you know, the media symbols that go for, can I say it, okie doke, right? We call it propaganda, right? We call it social engineering. You know, and it's one thing for that, but it's another thing when we who are on the ground, such a large number, go for it and raises the question, do they really have our minds and behaviors so much on lockdown that they can be able to shift that narrative and we don't say anything about it?
Well, it seems that way, Richard, in certain things with certain of our people. It does seem, not seems, it is that way. They can shift the narrative and dictate how you're supposed to respond to things. because they definitely did it here with this issue, dealing with kneeling for this kneeling. Why Kaepernick even started kneeling?
Mm-hmm. And I think what is it? Time magazine? Is that a Time magazine? Oh, sports. Is it a Sports Illustrated? They got on the cover.
Okay. Now?
All the players and talking about locking, you know, with their locking arms. It should be in the current Sports Illustrated, I believe.
Okay.
You know, so, I mean, that the, and to show, and Elliot, I think what you're raising is for us, you know, to be able to communicate that we're not just expressing our opinion around this. We're trying to reinforce the point of how, you know, in cahoots, from the president through the media, through the business owners, are all in connection.
Certainly.
To move away the idea of how we should be dealing with our own issue that is critical.
Certainly.
Because young men ain't still get, they are still getting killed. Not, you know, I had to talk to my nephew, who's 11 years old, in relationship to you just, you know, you got to be careful of the actions, that the behavior you're learning. Because when you walk out in that street, nobody's there. You flip off with the mouth thinking that you got some right. Them guys don't have to like you at all.
Let's grab a call and then come back to the conversation. Just go to 267, get involved. 267.
Yes. Richard and Elliot, good conversation. But I can tell you one thing that Trump has done for us when it comes to the black race, is that he exposed a lot of things of white racism that was hidden from a lot of people. And I'm going to say that in the name of sports. I'm going to say it in the name of politics. I'm going to say it in the name of race, period. So the situation, look at the situation that's going on in Puerto Rico. He's looking, I don't even know, Trump knows that Puerto Rico is a part of the Commonwealth. I think he's that stupid. I do. I think that he needs to know the different branches of government, just like Sheriff Cohen said she could look out her window and see Russia. I think that's what racism does. Racism makes you that way. You're so focused on your white supremacy, you see nothing else. Same thing with Obamacare. He's going back and forth with Obamacare. Okay, it wasn't the best of the picking of the health care, but when he started off okay, but he kept fighting the Republicans, and he ended up with something that was less than what he first started. But Trump is doing a good thing for us. He let us see that the Nazi Party is still around. He let us see the Uncle Toms that we would have finally found out about anyway. We found out about sooner. And he lets you see that he has not changed from the time that he said he would choose somebody in Central Park with a 45, all the way to the Central Park 5. Before that, his father, known as being a Klansman, and in the Nixon administration, they sued him for not letting blacks on his properties as renters. So this is our time to see where the line is drawn and who we're with. And he has a war going on in Afghanistan. Elliot, like you, I have been watching this Vietnam documentary. I thought it was pretty much on point. I saw the last showing of it. I think this was the part 10, which was Thursday. And the wars that these people fight for colonization and global white supremacy. Hey, he's telling you that none of that stuff is buried, it's to the surface. So we know what we're dealing with, Elliot. Now, what do we do to get him out? What do we do to get ourselves together is the next step. And I'm going to also say this, Elliot, whether I don't know if you and Richard appeared there, but I went to see the unveiling of Oviedo. Cato is Cato, not Cato. Cato, when you start pronouncing it right. And in that unveiling, man, I read the different captions of history next to his statue. And I need to do some more research on him, man. It just goes to show me I don't know enough. I'm always learning, man. I knew he went to Cheney. I never knew he was a principal of Cheney.
Well, why didn't you ask? You ought to ask Richard about all. Who knows more about Cato than Richard?
Richard, you're the man I want to talk to. As much as we talk, we didn't talk about that subject. But I want to.
Well, wait a minute, and I'm glad that you mentioned that, because here we go again. That we let white people control the paradigm. They doing it with this issue that we was just talking about. Right. They do it with every issue. Now, I heard them when they was at that unveiling, different reports from different local TV stations. They down there talking about Cato. The mayor, Kenny, was talking about, oh, I didn't know anything about Cato until I was 40. So people need to know. Listen, only reason he's doing this is for political reasons.
Oh, without a doubt.
He could care less about Cato.
Right.
Black students, and me is one of them. The only thing we knew about Cato was if you was kicked out of your regular school, that's where you went. You either went to Daniel Boone or you went to Cato.
Right. That's right.
But the thing is this. They was talking about the unveiling, and he was a civil rights activist. And he was murdered in Philadelphia. They never said who he was murdered by. They never said why. He was murdered by some of Kenny's ancestors.
Correct.
Irish people that didn't want blacks voting. It was a mob. Then you clear me up, Richard. A mob was gathering. He went to the establishment, the police. To say, listen here, blacks want to vote, and we need protection. Right. Well, at that time, they was Irish. The cops was Irish. Right, Richard?
Yes, it is. That's it.
So he didn't get any help. He went back to get his firearm.
Right.
Well, I think either before he got to his house, while he was going back to his house to get his gun, is when he was met by that mob. Hey, you can clear me up, Richard. Oh, I think Richard might have went to step away, but he was killed by an Irish mob. Now
I wanted to get a book, "The Life of an Irishman," William McMullen, Philadelphia Politics from the Bottom Up, 1824 to 1901. And what you're saying, Elliot, is right on point. And Cato, that grouping. It was a political assassination because they didn't want, as if we say, look at Fannie Lou Hamer and the Freedom Democratic Party, didn't want blacks to vote since they had to vote in those wards, in those areas. And he was leading that and also leading, but this wasn't directly against the streetcar, not being able to ride on streetcars because in Philadelphia in the 1800s, you know, blacks wasn't allowed to ride on streetcars. And that's where the contention is, because he was a member of the Equal Rights League, which was a national league, but he was a Pennsylvania secretary of that league in Pennsylvania, who actually pushed the Pennsylvania legislators against so that blacks could be able to ride on those streetcars. So it's a broader, you know, political dynamics in relationship to black political power that is not being told or may be told. But if we don't know it and we don't fashion it for the then and now, then, you know, I don't know what is going to be said. He's a civil rights leader that gave his life, was they putting him equal to Martin Luther King, like Martin Luther King just, you know, nonviolently gave his life so that black people can vote. Bottom line.
They didn't even say, they mentioned two news establishments didn't even mention him being murdered. One of them did, but they didn't mention who he was murdered by. Mm-hmm. That's a huge part of his life, who he was murdered by. He was murdered by some of Kenny's ancestors. Jim Kenny. He's an Irishman.
Richard Elliott, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to say this, right? This made me go back to what should be required reading. in the schools in Philadelphia, and in the college and university, especially the ones closer to Pennsylvania as much as possible, is the Philadelphia Negro. Because what Du Bois does in that area, see, it was really happening in that area. Sixth and Lombard, Du Bois lived in that area. You're eating, Cemetery was at 8th, around 8th and Arch and all of that. That was Eaton Cemetery all around here, to the best of my knowledge. We were all down there at that one time, and Du Bois, who was supposed to be teaching at University of Pennsylvania, who wasn't able to go in the classroom, that's when he said, I'll do the book. He's talking about, in that book, what the Irish is like. He does a sociological, geographical study where we could say he is the father of black sociology. And he starts in Philadelphia with it, though. But he's telling you what these people are like psychologically and where they're at geographically. So this makes me more know that him and Cato probably knew each other. See, we got to make these connections.
No, he wasn't
here. With Henry Highland Garnett.
No, he was gone. Long.
Came to the city.
He was going there.
When Cato passed or killed, Du Bois came later.
Mm-hmm.
He came in. I'm pretty sure he knew of it because did he write out of the North Star? Did he write out of the Liberator? Did he write out of the Liberator or North Star? Is that
Who's
true?
That? Who's that? Cato?
Cato.
No.
He didn't? Okay.
That was Frederick Douglass. Who had the North Star.
Right. And so Cato didn't write out of that. Okay.
No.
My other question to you is, explain to me, Richard, how he became a major. Did he do some long-time fighting in the Civil War? Tell me how he became a major on the spot.
They had regiments in Pennsylvania, so he was an officer of the Pennsylvania Regiment.
Okay.
And the regiment that were broken down because of the Civil War. You know, even in the Civil War, they didn't want to have black troops and white troops together. So you had a black regiment and a white regiment as a part of the Pennsylvania. So he was an officer of the Pennsylvania regiment, that particular regiment. If I can be able to just read this paragraph that speaks to that, again, out of the Philadelphia Politics. And the thing that if people go to who live in Chicago, live in New York, live in Baltimore, if they go into the black people in their area, they'll probably find the same kind of, as it relates to the politics, the same type of dynamics going on.
Right.
And this is McMillan. Now, he was the political boss for the Democratic Party. McMillan was in the 5th Ward in the morning and returned to the 4th Ward at midday, stationing himself at the polling place at 8th and Bainbridge Street. There was a continuous fighting because this is the riots of 1871, so it was riots going on. There was continuous fighting between blacks and whites. About 2 o'clock in the afternoon, Isaac Chase, a black man who lived directly behind the house belonging to the black Republican leader, Octavius Cato, went to vote. Two men later identified as Reedy Denver and Frank Kelly harassed Chase and followed him as he walked up an alley behind South Street on 8th towards his home. Shots were fired. Denver caught Chase and split his skull open with an axe, killing him. McMillan, Sergeant John Duffy, from the 8th and South Station, rushed down the block and chased the whites from the alley. Incensed blacks lined the rooftops and windows and hurled objects at the police. For the next 2 hours, the fights continued. After 4 o'clock, Octavius Cato was returning home from a visit with his friend, Jacob C. White Jr. Him and Jacob C. White Jr., they also had a baseball team called the Pythians. It was one of those teams which they also are celebrating in Philadelphia or memorializing in a way. But they weren't allowed to play against white players. But white players wanted to see their skills, so they did set up some games. But it's a whole history around these guys putting together this baseball team. Stopping at 8th and Lombard Street, Cato could see that the riot's still in progress. To avoid trouble, he walked up to 9th Street and proceeded east on South Street towards his home at number 814. When whether Frank Kelly was waiting for him or just happened to be on South Street at the time is unclear, but Kelly walked towards Cato. They passed at 822 South Street and exchanged words. 5 steps later, Kelly turned and fired. The second shot struck Cato in the heart, killing him immediately. Kelly ran around a corner and into a saloon at 9th and Bainbridge Street. A policeman helped Kelly escape out the back door, and he was then seen publicly in Philadelphia. He was not seen publicly in Philadelphia until 1877. McMillan spent the night that night and several nights after on the street, putting the blowers back in their holes. His way of saying that he was discouraging braggarts and loudmouths from fanning the flames of the continuing violence. And where did Kelly and the other person wind up? In Chicago. All right. Now, and this ties to the fire, because there used to be volunteer fire departments, but the Irish were the ones controlling the gang, because the fire departments were run by gangs. And then when they got the political power, the street political power, as Democrats, then they were able to become a part of the municipal system. So, you know, it's as y'all are saying, it becomes a broader issue around a political history of, in this case, Philadelphia, and the control that those ethnic groups who get to classify themselves as white are able to have, because they're able to get the patronage from the political system and be able to build those, because those saloons were, as now, or used to be, the polling places. All of them gathered. So, and they're trying to write a curriculum for the public school system. But it goes back to both of your points, as far as I see. If we're not engaged in it, this story, this perspective is not told in relationship to why we have elected officials today that aren't looking out for the best interest. Because that was an intimidation factor.
Yes, it was.
Wow.
You told me something, man, that opened my mind up, man. And I tell you, man, it was an overwhelming experience. I mean, the people that were there, I can say the African-Americans supported it. A lot of people left their jobs. They found a way to get out of the work. You know, some people might have been off that day, whatever it was.
Well, I'm not saying that they didn't, because I saw them on the news. They did support it. But what I'm saying is, Tim, that whole narrative need to be told surrounding Cato, his life, and his death. Don't just say, he was a civil rights activist, he was murdered. Come on.
Right.
And then you got whites talking about it. They down there clapping, talking about how good it is for him to have a statue, when they should be atoning for it, because he was killed by the same people. He was... The reason Colin Kaepernick got on his knees in the beginning is the same reason why Cato was killed back then in 1871.
And you heard the police was aiding the person who did the shooting.
Well, they were both Irish.
And here's the other thing. The bad thing about it, because I'm going to do more research on him. I want to see what his literary attitude was. I heard he taught that was known
Institute of Colored Youth.
And not only that, right, he trained teachers to teach. He became a principal of it, and I like to see his writings, man. I like to know what was in his head. But you're right, Ellie. In other words, the guy who killed him comes back and is tried and not guilty. He's acquitted.
Mm-hmm.
It's like with the police officers and the people who do all the time. They kill you, and they're acquitted.
That's the same problem, the same soup being warmed over.
Yeah, man. So I tell you, Elliot, it's a beautiful in-person statue, man, with some righties on the side of it, man. I said, I'm the way it looks so good, I hope nobody doesn't try to vandalize it, man. I mean, you know, because don't mess with our stuff now. Now, I know some stuff you have we don't need, like Lizzo stuff. Don't mess with it, because that's a beautiful piece there, man. And I met the guy who put it together, him and his partner, and he also had a picture of the voting box, a replica of it that they used to use. I mean, that's just, I mean, I think this should motivate Cheney alumni and people around the country who are in HBCUs to want to support Cheney, because if Cheney reproduces people like that, they make men and women like they do around the country at HBCUs. I mean, that made me feel proud that he was a Cheney graduate, man, and that he this man, like a lot of Cheney graduates that we're proud of. I like that, man. You know, I like that. You know, it's beautiful, man. And, you know, and like I said, I know things about some things. I don't know enough. And every time I turn around, I learn more. That's why I never say I'm the smartest one in the room, because I can learn from a whole lot of folks. But thank you for telling me about that, Richard. We got to get together. And I'll be going to the Bloxham Collection one day this coming week. And he has a lot of stuff that I need to learn about when it comes to people. And I'm pretty sure he has a lot on OVK, though. If anybody doesn't have it, I know Bloxham does.
Tim, thank you for your call, man.
Indeed.
Peace. Richard, before we go to our next call, let me mention this, because we talked about whites changing the paradigm, changing the conversation, wanting black people to approach issues the way they want them to. It's kind of ironic that the NFL have successfully, to this point, changed that whole paradigm to what Kaepernick was even protesting about, to the point where they don't even mention his name anymore. They're talking about this idiot, Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. But let me read this here for the listening audience, because you can see it's already being talked about on other levels. Now, the NFL, I think, is 70% African-American players. It's one other sports league that's higher than that. That's the NBA. Now, I'm going to read from this published report about the NBA commissioner and what he said. This is the title of it from a published report in the Denver Chronicle. In terms of the anthem, Silver expects NBA players to stand. The discussion about the anthem overshadowed several changes the league's made during its annual preseason gathering. NBA Commissioner David Silver speaks at a news conference on Thursday, September 28th in New York. President Donald Trump's comments and tweets about NFL players who take a knee during the national anthem and the league's response from owners to players have dominated headlines this past week. They also led to plenty of discussion about what, if anything, NBA players will do during the anthem when preseason games begin this weekend, or when the regular season begins in less than 3 weeks. There's one significant difference, however, between the two leagues. The NFL has no rule about what players should do during the anthem. The NBA does. We have a rule that requires our players to stand for the anthem, says NBA Commissioner David Silver at a news conference following the conclusion of this week's Board of Governors meeting in New York. It's been our rule for a long time, as long as I've been involved in the league. My expectation is that our players will continue to stand for the anthem. Now, here we go again. This white guy is basically telling these black players, you're going to stand for the anthem.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's no other way around it. He's telling them, you're going to stand, because the rules say you got to. So you're going to stand.
Now, if they had that choice, this money or that principle.
That's the choice they got to make. That's the choice they got to make. Now, if they had some strength, then several of them would say, well, I'm not saying, you ain't going to dictate to me. If this situation means that much to me, what Colin Kaepernick was talking about, I'm not standing. But let's see what happens, because these games for this NBA is starting very soon. and he's already laid down his gauntlet. He laid down the gauntlet. He said, you're going to stand. That's basically what he said, Richard. You're going to stand. He couched it with, well, the rules say that you have to, and I've been involved in the NBA for a long time. I'm not even going to deal with that part. I'm dealing with the part where he said, you're going to stand.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to the phones. 646. 646.
Damn, Elliot, you stole my thunder. I was just going to get ready to jump in on how the white daddy done told these buck dancing so-called powerful Negroes that, you know, y'all Negroes go stand up. I'm not playing this BS with y'all like they're playing with you in the
NFL.
I know. You know what I mean? Y'all Negroes are going to stand. Y'all ain't got no effing power here. It's a rules and regulations. It's on the book. Negroes, y'all go stand. Now, if these Negroes really think that they got some power, then what they would do would tell them, kiss my ass, and we go do what we want to do. We not going to stand. Now, these Negroes think that they got some power because of what they did to the cracker of the Los Angeles Clippers, Sterling. They got rid of him in the league. So then I would think they would be able to bypass this order from this white man if they really that goddamn gangster. Am I right or wrong?
Well, I would agree. I would agree with
you.
They're
not together like that, are they?
I'm under the impression that LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and all of the heads, the Chris Pauls, the Carmelo Anthony, all of the top stars are all boys. That they all are intellectual collective. That they all are in one accord on the so-called blackness. You know what I'm saying? So basically, they supposed to tell Silver to kiss their ass. And we gonna kneel, bend, shake, shoot, and do whatever we want to do. But if we or one of our members say that they don't want to stand, then we gonna back them and you ain't gonna find them and you ain't gonna do nothing. If you really gangster, if you really bother about it. Now, from what I've seen and what I just looked at, it seems like Sister Marie Michelle Roberts, the head of the union, she's not going to back down. Now, I know some of the members of the league, it's punks, because she was going to defend the punk that they suspended last year for a whole bunch of games because of something that he did, and he said no. He was going to take his punishment because he was under the impression that if he put his tail between his legs, they would give him a job, but it didn't happen. She was going to go to bat for his punk ass, but his punk ass said no. He was going to take his punishment like he said, like a man. Well, and they didn't give him no job in the league nothing else.
Help me out, Jay and Elliot. So are y'all telling me that the union representative for the NBA is a female?
Yeah, the head of the union is Michelle Roberts. She's a sister from New York.
Okay.
A lesbian too. You know what I mean?
Did he have to bring it in?
You gotta call it what it is. She got the back end of the game mafia if need be. So what's no big deal? But I'm saying she's a tough broad. You know what I mean? She gangster. You know what I mean? I like her style. I ain't got no problem. But what I'm saying is, I'm going on record. And I'm going on record from the jump street. NBA players are punks. They scared. They're not going to do anything.
Well,
they're not going to challenge that white boy.
Now, wait a minute, Jade. I'm curious to see, and I hope that the black public kind of look at this situation. I think the comments by this commissioner might have went over a lot of black folks' heads. But if you notice, LeBron James had made some statements. He called Trump, he called him a chump or something like that. Nobody listening to you chump.
A bum?
A bum. Curry put on a Kaepernick jersey and said that he supports Kaepernick. A few players made statements in reference to Kaepernick, not necessarily some solidarity with white folks. Or locking arms, although I remember after the that owner, Donald Sterling, when they was interested in what black players was going to do with the Clippers, they came out with their arms locked. But I want to see what's going to happen in reference to this, whether they all going to stand up or whether some of them going to kneel down. Because, listen, if they do it in solidarity, ain't nobody coming. On these teams, you got two or three white guys on each team. Nobody coming out. Nobody coming to see them. And what, they going to play by themselves?
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, you know, LeBron is supposed to be super Negro. You know what I mean? He had a beautiful show.
Well, I'm not going to put – listen, no, me personally, me, I'm not going to put it all at his feet. Go ahead.
No, I'm not putting it all on him. But I was just going to say to you, he had a beautiful shirt in regards to Donald Trump, one of the best ones I've seen in regards to effing Donald Trump. I mean, I wish I could get a hold of that one that he had, but I'm going to go on record and say he's not about it. You know what I mean? He's not going to stand up and fight the power because he got too much money caught up in the game. He got too much involved to challenge the white daddy on a certain level. You know what I'm saying? Now, he may talk that itch. He may talk that I'm about this, I'm about that. But no, I believe if his white daddy tell him cool it, Negro, he's gonna cool it. Now, this is gonna definitely put him on call. This is definitely gonna make him show if he's gonna be a defiant Negro or not. And if he's going to be a defiant Negro, it's going to make Silver and the rest of them cronies see how much of a pushback they could put on them. Now, I tell you this much, the females, they tried to put some pushback on them, and them sisters wasn't having it, and they backed off for them.
They walked
the
off.
Sisters now, didn't they? The sisters basically, they backed off for them, and they changed their prescription. But I'm going to be real, real interested in see what's going to happen, because I tell you this, that folding arms and all of that is BS to me.
Oh, you know that. Come
on. You know what I mean?
Come on.
That's joking to me. It's like, you know, the major daddy, I would love to see one of the Cowboys define that Jerry Jones, because that's a cracker I really don't like at all. You know what I'm saying? But it don't seem like nobody could define that cracker.
When I seen all those players
put together a show and go on the field before the anthem and kneel down and then get up and hold on. See, that's the type of BS to me. I don't like playing that game.
I know.
That's why I'm glad I'm not a part of it. Because, see, I can't go along with those type of four. You know what I'm saying? But then again, you got to realize, man, a man like LeBron James and D-Wade and all of them, they supposed to be able to do whatever the hell they want to. Because, see, they not in no position to ever go broke, I would hope. So if you're not in no position to ever go broke, you're supposed to do your thing. You're supposed to be able to tell the white man at this stage in your life and in your career to kiss my ass. Because, see, the owner got more to lose by messing with LeBron James than they do anything. You don't want to get into a pissing contest with LeBron James now at this stage of the game.
Wouldn't I be correct in saying, I mean, and this is a good model in relationship to the broader political question as we as black people, because as I hear the discussion goes on, it's good that you have this exceptional individual that could, because of their position, they can take a principled stand. But isn't this the kind of situation where, especially as we're going into it, Kaepernick did almost a guerrilla thing, right? He hit them from the side. They didn't know that was coming. And they've been trying to clean up. And this is what we're calling this has been makeup up to even, in my opinion, what Trump did in order to bring them back together. But what you're raising is whether the NBA players are going to lock hands knowing that they're going into this together, compared to that you got to one at a time try to get them to decide whether they want to take a principled stand. because it can't be on LeBron James himself. James himself, because it ain't just the owners, it's the media. I mean, you had the politicians, you had the whole white supremacist network going after whether Kaepernick should have made a statement or not.
Yeah, so, but you know what I don't understand that's missing me, and I think people still ain't getting and nobody can totally define it to me is, why are we still talking about Kaepernick? Think about it. Why are we still talking about somebody and trying to get somebody a job that has basically divorced himself from this, gone on about his life and his business, not looking for no type of anything from nobody, not doing anything to bring any sort of attention to himself, living right. his life, and going about the business of his day-to-day. See, you know, that goes to show you, in all honesty...
No, well, that's not exactly
that
true,
Jay. I respect Kaepernick's position more than I respect those that are going about the business of trying to make this into something bigger than what it is. Because in all of this, he's the only one who's really lost anything, in a sense. And if you really think about it, in his mind, he ain't lost nothing because he handling his business. He going on with his life. He not devastated. He not crushed. He doing what he's supposed to do.
I disagree with you on that, Jay.
Wow.
I disagree. And this is why I would disagree. And I understand the point as far as utilizing, because he's just a symbol, and that's really where the deflection took place, right? He only symbolized a sociological thing that's happening to Black people. He used his position, and when we mention his name, we're mentioning his name, and we have to, you know, because the media is really done took it out of his name. They, as you say, they're not bringing up Kaepernick. They're not bringing that up. They're mm-hmm. bringing up kneeling. They're bringing up the flag, pledging allegiance. They're not bringing up. But what he, for Black people, his symbol was, is that you can utilize your position no matter where you are to speak to the political injustices that are happening to Black people in this country.
Yeah,
and that's why
he
becomes...
What are they using it for, though?
Huh?
Richard, what are they using? Using it for to change the narrative? Narrative is no longer the injustice that Kaepernick was talking about. It's
right,
about patriotism now.
But
that's what I'm saying. It's a joke.
But that's what I think the point Elliot is making, the relationship of them, as you're saying, them changing the narrative.
Yeah, we was letting
that don't mean we have to change the narrative.
Exactly.
Yeah, but we don't control the narrative.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
No, we don't control the narrative. I'm going to tell you why we don't control the narrative. The reason why we don't control the narrative is because we don't have the position to put back the fight back to make sure that the narrative goes back to the point of what Kaepernick was saying. We're constantly trying to fight the battle against, no, it's not about patriotism and all of this other stuff. See, you change the narrative is if the NBA players stand up and make the narrative that we're going to do what we have to do. That's when the narrative will go back to Kaepernick. But if they capitulate and don't fight, then the narrative is always going to be about the daddy saying that you're going to do what we're going to have to do. Then it's going to go back into Trump saying what he's saying and saying that this is what the NFL should have done like the NBA did, that make it a rule. It will never go back to that. Then it will go back to being, the NFL now has to make it a rule that you have to stand at attention and you cannot kneel for the saying of the national anthem. Do you understand what I'm trying to say to you? It will never go back to that.
I agree with what you're saying, and I understand that, but I think we're saying, because we're doing it right now in this forum right now, and us having this discussion, we are making sure that the narrative amongst ourselves are is staying focused. Now, even if we mention Kaepernick's name, that what the purpose of Kaepernick making that stand stays true. It's not about the players. They can just amplify it, being NFL, being anybody. But it's about us being able to, in every form, and again, that's why Kaepernick becomes important, to be able to keep the discussion on the social injustice of the system of white supremacy as it relates to the police, as it relates to other areas of our social condition. That responsibility is ours. Now, the question you raise is, are we going to stay? And the thing that frightened the NFL, in my opinion, why they had to bring out 45, and that's if it was a strategic move, him going to Alabama, making that statement, and assisting in the change in the narrative, because amongst us, the discussion and the possibility of the populist backlash of people saying, I'm not going to watch the NFL. It wasn't about the players.
It's not a matter of watching the NFL, because the thing is, people are going to watch the NFL regardless. See, this is the thing that most people don't realize.
Well, their numbers is down, Jay, so there's a lot of people that ain't been watching.
I don't even think, you know, truthfully, Elliot, I don't even know if the numbers are down as far as, is the numbers down as far as viewership, or is the numbers down as far as people going to the game, or what? You know what I mean? Now, the interesting thing is going to be what's going to happen with this whole thing with the NBA.
I agree.
This, to me, will be more telling.
Right, I agree.
Than what's happening with the NFL.
Now, let me ask you a question, Jay, before we move on. Let me ask you a question. Yeah. Do you think that Trump has talked to some of these NBA owners? I ain't talking about that Uncle Tom down there in North Carolina. They tell him what to do, and he's a parrot. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Jordan. Yeah. I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about some of their old money, like the Sterlings and all of them. You think he's talked to them already?
To the NBA?
Yeah.
I think the ownership in the NBA is a little more liberal than the ownership is in the NFL.
I think that's only because the money is made solely from black players.
But I think he has.
And the reason I'm saying that is this. He's the type of guy that if you say something about him, he's going to fire back with tweets and all that other stuff. He loved to tweet. Now, when LeBron James said, you bum, nobody want to come to the White House anyway. And then Curry.
He didn't respond to him, I don't think.
Exactly. Now, wait a minute. Is that Donald Trump? You know, he responds right off the bat. He didn't respond.
I think there's a different cultural appreciation in regards to white people and LeBron James than there is with football players.
I think you're giving them too much credit in this respect.
No. There's more of a universal appeal to white people to LeBron James than there is to football
players. Well, they're more of a universal appeal to black players, period, as long as they play their sport and shut up. As soon as they don't.
No. There's a little different. There's more of an appeal as far as white people in basketball than there is and white people in football. I think the interaction is a total different because it's a little more intimate because there's a lesser amount of
you'll see if one of those NBA players decide to go toe to toe. See, and that was the difference. Kaepernick, for example, he not only was kneeling on the field, but when they would question him after every game about what he was doing, first, he was still playing quarterback, so they talk about the game. Then afterwards, they get to what they really want to talk about. He would always go toe-to-toe with the media, and almost every week, he would say something else in reference to the injustices of this system against black people.
Yeah, but LeBron, to be honest with you, LeBron James has done the same in a sense.
Well, he hasn't done that consistently.
No.
None of those guys have done that consistently.
Elliot, he's been quite outspoken. He's been more outspoken.
Oh, I'm not saying that he hasn't, but I'm talking about consistently dealing with this issue.
Yeah, he has. Yes,
well,
honestly.
I'm going to tell you this, Jay.
They're
going to have the opportunity.
More for the community than Kaepernick has.
He's done a lot of things in the community, honestly. He's made a lot more money
really
than Kaepernick.
Look at his community activities and things that he's done in the Cleveland area, in the community, than Kaepernick
has. Well, he's made a lot more money than Kaepernick. You can't compare them financially.
But the point of the matter, in all honesty, he stood up, he's made certain statements, just like Kaepernick has, and all of that. The question now becomes, if the NBA players are going to collectively challenge the NBA
that's my whole point.
To the stance that they're taking.
Then we'll see who's really standing up, because this man done told
but
him,
but
you're
know,
going to stand.
I don't know what they my question is this. It's a smaller group of players. To me, I think it's a more powerful base of players. And I would just like to know if they're going to do it. I think one thing that I would be surprised is if their agents, who I think have more control over them than the football agents do, what is going to be their response. And it's going to be quite interesting. All it takes is going to be at least three of them to say that we're not going to allow for Silver to dictate what our response. And I could tell you who the three players could be.
They got to be having that discussion now.
Certainly.
I could tell you who the three players could be that could set it off. That these are the three players that if they make a strong stance, the league will definitely back off. And those three players would be Chris Paul, LeBron James, and Carmelo Anthony. If those three players stand up and say that we're not going to go along with that, and that our players have the right if they choose to sit down, take a knee, or do whatever what they choose as a form of protest, we're going to back them. And I believe that the NBA will back off. They'll try to save face. Donald Trump will probably get involved. There'll be a slight degree of pushback. But with all of the things involved and all of the things in play and the way that things are in regards to the NBA and the economics, and the popularity and all at play, the NBA will probably back off. But in order for it to be successful, those three players would have to be at the head of it. And if they get maybe someone like a Dwayne Wade or some of the other highly visible maybe ex-players like Kobe Bryant,
Hey, hold it, Jay. You're going too far.
No, because you didn't even let me finish what I was going about to say that was going to really shock you. The person that will probably cause the most problem in this conflict that will come to the defense of the NBA will be this jackass Charles Barkley. He's going to be the Negro that's going to come in and cause the most problems for the players. I don't think he can cause any problems.
All he can do is just run his mouth.
If they don't make the decision before they go in, the scenario that you raised, Jay, I would say would be a scenario, even given the weight that you give the individuals they have, given it would be make it a failure. Because that's what the owners the ownership, not just the ownership of the teams, but the owners of all the other, the media,
yeah,
and
but the
other
owners don't weigh that type of power. See, there's a difference. There's a difference between the power of the NBA owners and the power of the NFL owners. See, you can't get away with keeping a no, let me finish this. You mm-hmm. can't keep away a good NBA player out of the league like you can keep in a good NFL player out of the league. You can't really blackball an NBA player like you could an NFL player. See,
what? Wait a minute. Hold it. What's the brother's name? Because he won a 3-point title, I think, 2 or 3 years in a row.
You're talking about Greg Hodges.
Yeah, Hodges was blackballed. Abdul Rauf was blackballed.
Yeah, but no. Let me explain something to you, and I'll do it quick. They had enough time in the league to where as they could have been blackballed.
No. What do you mean they could have been?
No. Hold on. Let me finish. Listen, you cannot blackball a player that had the time in the league that Kaepernick had in the NFL the same way that you could a Hodges. Remember, Hodges had over 11, or I think it was 10 or 11 years in the league.
No, Hodges hadn't played no 10 or 11 years.
Had something like 10 or 11 years
no,
in the league.
No, he didn't. No,
and
he
remember,
did not.
Remember, Kaepernick only had like 7 or 8 years in the league. So that's why they was able to get away with it. Anybody that has 7 to 8 years in the league and played on the level that Kaepernick played in the NBA, they couldn't blackball him in the NBA at his level. That is as productive as Kaepernick. They couldn't do it in the NBA. They couldn't do it to him.
Yeah, well,
they
that's what you say, Jay, but that's not exactly accurate. And I want you to check when you get off the air, I want you to check how many years Hodges and Abdul Rauf, they didn't have no 11 years in this league.
Hodges had around 11, Hodges had 10 or 11 years, and Mahmoud had at least 7 to 8.
Oh, you just said that that Abdul Rauf had 11 years.
No, I said Hodges had 10 to 11 years.
And you said Abdul Rauf. I'll play back the tape. You said Abdul Rauf had 11 years. I know Abdul Rauf
had. No, I said Hodges had 10 to 11 years. Greg Hodges had 10 to 11 years, and Mahmoud had 7 to 8.
Yeah, I agree. Mahmoud Abdul Rauf had around 7 years in this league.
Right, and he basically didn't get picked up because of what happened and some other
he
things.
He was blackballed. They
was
call it blackballed.
I think he may have been blackballed. But see, one thing nobody will ever admit about Mahmoud was he may have been blackballed, but that didn't stop him from going overseas and having an excellent career, making a lot of money and being fulfilled. He'll tell you that himself. He's not bitter about it at all. Well, you know what I mean? He'll tell you that. And you need to do an interview with him because he would come on your show and he'll tell you that he went over and played, I think, another 10 years, made good money, fulfilled his basketball life to where he couldn't play anymore, and he's very satisfied.
Well, see,
saw the world.
Jay, that's the difference. When I asked you, do you think Donald Trump has talked to some of these NBA owners?
Mm.
Because the difference is with the NFL and the NBA is the NBA has world appeal. World appeal. People all over the world gravitate to these black players. They ain't gravitating to these white boys. They gravitate to these black players. You go all over in China. You just made mention of it. Stephon Marbury, all of them, making money over there in China. Abdul Rauf. That's where he made his money after he left here. The leader of North Korea, he couldn't wait to have retired black ball, not no white boys running over there, retired black ball players to come over there. Dennis Rodman grabbed a bunch of retired players and they went over there because the leader of China, the leader of North Korea wanted to see black players. See, he can't. When those black players fired back, called him a bum and shut up, we don't want to go to the White House anyway, and that idiot didn't respond back, I know he has talked to some of these owners. They want to handle this situation a little bit different than they handled that NFL situation. Because you got too many black players. You got too many black players and international black players. You got black players all from Africa that stars in this league. You got black players that's from Europe that stars in this league. In fact, one of the guys, he's not a star, but one of the players from Europe got beat up by the cops and he broke his leg.
Yeah, I know. As a matter of fact, he's black.
Matter of fact, that's what I said. The black player, he's from Europe. Tabo Cephalosha. They worked him over and broke his leg when he was with New York.
And they gave him, I think, from what I understand, $4 million. New York paid him.
Yeah, well, I know they paid him, but I'm just saying. Listen, I know he's talked to these owners. So, I guess what's the name call itself laying down the gauntlets?
Huh? Talk to him about what, Elliot? This is what I'm trying to understand.
Listen, Jay, this is what he's talked to them about. This is what he's talked to them about. The same way white folks talk in general. See, white folks is not reactionary to stuff black folks do. Black people have a problem where we have become reactionary and always reacting to what white folks do. They don't do that. They sit and try to plan out, well, when we do this, we might get this type of response from black people. They're always planning, try to plan two or three steps ahead of black folks. They do. So believe me, he has talked with these owners. I don't know what the hell he's talking with them about, but I know he's talked with those owners.
To do what? That's what I don't know.
You'll find out.
The what is about dollars and cents and about mobilizing the broader black community to do something that they can't control. They can't control them. When they have these quote-unquote rebellions, these are incidents that they thought they had control over, but at the moment they had no control over. And talking to them, this symbol language that the players could be able to use now, using the platform of their position in the media to be able to speak to an audience, to talk about a social and political thing. They're talking about, well, how do we curtail this to where we can still make our money and not help them, not just mobilize to where another generation who is watching these guys who are the same age, help them not become organized.
Exactly. Exactly.
Those young people who are listening to them saying and know that the narrative is not about the individual. It's about the social injustice. They are upset and fed up. And they've been involved in two political campaigns, whether you call it the Obama campaign and the Bernie Sanders campaign. And you don't need these here gladiators assisting them, communicating them, because they already had
You just said something. You just said something about the Bernie campaign and the Obama campaign.
Well, I wouldn't put that necessarily, but I guess that's a Rich's analysis.
I mean, those millennials, don't they watch football? Don't they watch basketball?
So let me get this right, Richard. You're trying to say that this could lead to the Bernie campaign.
No, not no.
The,
no.
And the Obama campaign joining
forces. No, I'm saying they became more organized under those two campaigns. Those young people got involved in those campaigns around a political issue. They utilized those campaigns to use social media amongst themselves and became organized.
Yeah, but now, that, Richard, to be honest, that might be a poor example to use in reference to these NBA players. Mm-hmm. That might be a poor example to use.
Well, all I must say is let's see how it plays out. I mean, my prediction is that the NBA players, like I said, if the three top players say that we ain't going for it, fight back. And say, no, we're going to make the choice that we're going to kneel or do whatever we going to do, and you're not going to fine us, and you're not going to curtail what we do, then, hey, that's one thing. But if the owners are going to be heavy-handed with them and they go along with that, then that's another thing. I personally don't think that they're going to let their owners bully them, especially with the type of rhetoric that...
Well, I hope you're right, Jay.
That Trump has put forward with this whole thing with the NFL. It's no way they could do that.
Well, it is a way to do it, but I hope you're right. I hope you're right, because
I hope I'm right.
Because these men don't need to be always dictated to by white folks. And believe me,
What did you say?
I said our people need to stop being dictated to by white folks. And believe me, they have already made plans to what's going to happen if these boys do this. That's what I'm talking about. White folks, they always try to plan two or three steps ahead when it comes to you. So they've already told him to throw out the gauntlet right away and see how they respond. This is a test. This is how they're testing the waters. He didn't jump out there and say, well, listen, we expect all you guys to stand because it's a league rule. They've already said that. In fact, he's already leaked it out that they've already met with their board of governors. They've already talked about this. And they've talked about Plan B. Plan B is what they plan to do if two or three, four, five, six, 20 players start kneeling or turning their back or go in the locker room.
I tell you like this, it's gonna be quite interesting.
It is, and I agree with you.
If they come after the players in a heavy-handed way, you know Trump is gonna be backing them, and I think that in the long run, the owners are gonna really, really cause some problems with not only the players but their fan base.
Yeah, well, I hope they do. I hope they do.
It's going to turn into them being nothing but white supremacists.
And not only that, that's going to draw a gauntlet. If you have some blacks that are sincere in what they're doing, that's going to draw a gauntlet down between some of these black players that want to keep their head up white girls' butts on these teams.
Oh, yeah.
And the white agents' butts. Because some of these black players, they can't, everything white, they can't help it. It's like a fly to honey or bee to honey. They can't. One of the top players in this league, he can't. Well, what's it? With Houston, that was up for MVP, Harden. He can't wait to be sniffing around behind white girls. The other idiot. The other idiot that used to play for the Washington Bullets. He can't wait to make stupid statements in reference to black women.
Oh, you talking about Gilbert?
Well, whoever. Yeah. You got a lot of blacks in that league that's similar to that idiot Charles Barkley and Kobe Bryant. Believe me, Kobe Bryant ain't no black man.
Kobe may surprise us on this one.
He ain't gonna surprise me. He might surprise you.
But hey, Elliot, all I can say is this, man. It's gonna be real interesting if the players decide they want to be.
I agree with you, Jay. I agree with you 100%.
Because this is gonna be one of those things where, you know, you're gonna have to confront the white man. You're gonna have to confront the daddy.
You got to. I agree.
I'm gonna listen to Sirius NBA radio this weekend, maybe if I get a chance, because they're going to be talking about it, because I know for
get to hear those three stooges that be up there on one of them NBA telecasts, the three stooges, Mo, Larry, and Curly.
That piece of garbage, Stephen A. Smith.
No, I ain't talking about him. I'm talking about the three stooges that be up there on them NBA TNT telecasts.
Oh, you're talking about Shaquille and
Charles Barkley. Well, I don't want to call the name? Yeah. Because he don't act too much like a stooge, but the other two act too like stooges.
But you know something, man?
He loves the police. He can't wait to put on a police uniform. And the other one talks stupid all the time.
But you know, it's good. It's good for manhood. It's good for the training of how we are able as athletes to really define yourself, because there's a whole difference between the NBA and the NFL. See, the owners in the NFL have I believe, much more control over their athletes than the NBA. You know what I mean? I think that.
Oh, yeah. Well, they don't have those guaranteed contracts.
More control.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So there's going to be, if you're going to heavy hand the NBA players, it's going to be real, real difficult because there's a lot more things the NBA players could do to cause problems than the NFL players could do. So, I mean, you know, I don't think they want those type of problems with the NBA players.
Oh, I know they
because
don't.
Because of the way the game is. The game is a game to where they're making a lot of money. It's a real, real popular game internationally, you know, and everything. So, I mean, like you said, I think, like you said, they're trying to get control of it. But, you know, I never understand. What gives you the right to tell me that I must stand for something? What gives you the right to tell me that I have to stand?
Well, because they're white and you're black. So they figure they have the right to tell you what to do.
You don't have that right. I have a right to choice.
And they signed the contract.
I tell you this much. The NBA players are more inclined to break that contract and cause problems in regards to that contract collectively than the NFL players are.
Oh, well, yeah, because they got guaranteed.
You'll get more players collectively.
They don't have guaranteed contracts in the NFL. They can do like your president said. Go down there and say, you're fired. They basically could do that if they wanted to.
Yeah, but, you know, the thing is this. I think, like I said, the woman that's the head of the union, she's a fighter. I think that they really don't want the type of problems that they're looking for. I think that the players will probably stand up. And I think that when it's all said and done, that, you know, sometimes you got to make it through what you do, baby. You got to fight for what you believe in. And if the players believe in the right of free speech and the right to protest and the right to do what they choose to do, then they go do it. And I think that they'll back the owners up, and, you know, that'll be what it is. But listen,
Jay,
I'll talk
thank
to
you for your call,
Sunday.
Man.
Have a good one, brothers.
Peace. Mm-hmm. Before we go to the next call, Richard, let me give you another example of whites dictating to blacks what they're going to do, even now in 2017. Now, if you remember when the new Smithsonian Museum opened in Washington, it was a big stink when white folks found out that Uncle Thomas wasn't immortalized in the museum. Mm. You know who I'm talking about.
No. Clarence?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I said Uncle
mm-hmm.
Thomas. Well, okay. Right. Clarence Thomas. When they found out that he wasn't immortalized in the museum, they made a big stink about it. Now,
right.
most black people don't feel as though he need to be in that museum.
Mm-hmm.
The museum is supposed to be an immortalization of people that contributed to our existence here in the United States, because it's basically a diaspora. It's not a world history of blacks. It's basically a diaspora museum. Mm-hmm. Not a diaspora. The United States blacks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let me read this, and you tell me is something wrong with this picture. This is from another published report from a couple of days ago. Clarence Thomas display added to the Black History Museum exhibits. Conservatives have long complained about the omission of U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas from the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. Now they're rejoicing. The Washington Times reports that the museum, which is celebrating its one-year anniversary, announced Monday it has installed a display on Sunday honoring the nation's second African-American High Court Justice. Thomas's unwavering conservatism from the bench has long riled civil rights community, and he's typically sides with right-wing justices who disapprove of affirmative action and programs that level the playing field. and who will oppose eliminating racial biases in a voting system. According to this news outlet, Thomas appears with Thurgood Marshall, the first black Supreme Court justice, in an exhibit to honor both men. When the museum opened last year, Fox News noted that the exhibits conspicuously ignored Justice Thomas, describing him as a powerful black political figure, second only to Barack Obama. The inclusion of Anita Hill, who accused Thomas of sexual harassment, and quarterback Colin Kaepernick in the museum displays added fuel to their fire. Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz, one of six GOP lawmakers, to introduce a congressional resolution urging the museum to give Thomas a prominent place, the Hill reported. In a letter, Ted Cruz wrote, "I believe the museum has made a mistake by omitting the enormous legacy and impact of Justice Thomas, as well as his compelling background." Now, two things. If that's a museum of African American history and culture, why would you include somebody who's against almost in every aspect African American progress? You wouldn't. Mm-hmm. You couldn't go to a Jewish museum and have them dictate to them who's going to be in their museum. I couldn't go to an Italian American museum and say, "Don't put what's that clown, the murderer." His holiday is getting ready to be. No, his holiday is getting ready to come up in a couple of days.
Oh, Columbus.
Oh, I couldn't go to an Italian American museum and tell them to omit Columbus. They look at me like I'm crazy. That's their museum. They can put any murderer they want in there. Jews can put whoever they want in there. If somebody that abused blacks had a history of doing it, they can do whatever they want. It's their museum. I can't dictate to them who to put in there. So how are these people dictating who should go in an African-American museum and his contributions to African-Americans? Now, they can say what they want out of their mouth, but how is it possible now that an exhibit for him is going up in that museum? Who's in control of that museum? Aren't they supposed to give the black people an accounting? Why have all of a sudden Uncle Tom is going to be up there along with Thurgood Marshall in a place of prominence in that museum? Don't they have an obligation to give black people an explanation? Who pressured them to do this? It says six GOP lawmakers put in a resolution to force the museum to do this. Mm-hmm. Come clean to the community. Whose museum is that? Somebody will go up there and throw some eggs at that darn exhibit. Come on, man. You know, this type of stuff, this is what we're talking about. White folks dictating to black folks what they're going to do and how they're going to do it. At the highest levels, Richard, at the highest levels, these people are supposed to be the one to have some cojones or some balls. At the highest levels, you got white people dictating to black people what they're going to do, and they end up doing it.
That's why I said that this whole thing we were talking about earlier with the teams, it's not about just the owners, you know, that is involved in this here. I mean, even to the planning, as you say, you know, to even to get Trump to go out and say something at that highest level, there's a group of them that say, "We want this in there." And
they get it in there.
Right.
Republican, that's supposed to be black folks' enemy. If you turn on some of these black talk stations, that's all they're talking about. These evil Republicans, this and that and the other. And you see the GOP, Republican lawmakers, said that he need to be in that museum. Then poof, all of a sudden, he's in the museum. Come on, man. Boy, you make me say something here. I want to be kind of professional on the air. They can make me use profanity.
Yeah, we don't want you to raise your blood pressure.
Let's go to 215. Let's go to 215. Eric, 215.
Hey, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, how y'all brothers doing?
Hey, son. Right,
yeah, forgive me. Hey, man, I missed most of the shows. I just came from a real estate workshop and everything, but I heard Brother Jay just now. Elliot, you know, I don't even know where to begin. I mean, I'm sure I missed a lot of good things. I know y'all show been jumping tonight, especially with this such a volatile topic. But, you know, Brother Elliot, on Uncle Clance and stuff, you know, I don't see what's the big deal that he have to be in there anyway, because like you said, Elliot, you know, he's a house nigga. If he would have been maybe the first black Supreme Court justice, you know, then they would have some kind of an argument to put him in there just for the fact that he was the first. But he's the second, so it's no big deal anyway. If you look at it from that, but and then you add to the fact he's a house nigga and he's against any kind of things for black people, progress for black people. You're right, Brother Ellie. He don't deserve to be in there. And for them to sit there and kowtow to these crackers and the GOP or anybody else, it's crazy. Because like you said, you can't go to the Jews and stuff. Like, for example, they got in the Jewish museums right down center city, they got that murderer in there, Menachem Begin, a war criminal. They got him in their museum. He's a criminal. You know what I mean? But yet the Jews still put him in there, you know? So, I mean, you know, it's just sad that black people still let these devils dictate who know what to do. And that just goes back. This is why I agree with Brother Jay to a large degree on what he was saying about these black athletes. I'm going to put it in the context, Elliot and Richard. These black athletes, I believe, Elliot and stuff, I mean, time will tell, but I do believe the genie is out the bottle. I don't believe, but it got to be nurtured and structured in the right way, because you know you're going to get the pushback. I think from this point on, and whether it be basketball, football, baseball, hockey, you're going to see black players continue to take a stand on social justice, because I think the genie's out the bottle and stuff. Because these, because again, Michael Bennett, when he was on that town hall on CNN the other night with Malcolm Jenkins and Hines Ward and Spike Lee and them, like Michael Bennett said, just what I've been telling you and Richard in the Time for the Awakened audience, he says that, because as you know, he had the altercation with the devil cops in Vegas where they put guns through his head. Remember, Elliot?
Mm-hmm.
And Richard? All right. Yeah. Well, Michael Bennett, and I'm so proud of that brother. He's such a stand-up brother. Like he said, he says that when I leave the sports arena, and like most black men, he said, when I leave the sports arena, I'm a black man. He said, when I get into my car, he said, I'm susceptible to the encounter police violence, just like Philando Castile, any other black man. And this is what I've been telling y'all, brothers. I said, if we had a chance and stuff to talk to some of these black athletes, no matter what sport, even not only the brothers, but even some of the sisters, I guarantee you that they will tell you they've had encounters with the police. They probably had guns put to their head. They probably been told to lie down, shut up, nigga, all that kind of. Them crackers don't care nothing about how profile they are. When they leave that sports arena, and that same white cop could have been just chanting them at a sporting event. Now, this is how white people, they like the brother said, white people have a convertible morality. They could have been just chanting for that brother a couple hours earlier. Now that same cracker cop, now that he on duty, put a gun to that same brother's head if he pull him over. You understand? Because this is how white people are. They can flip the strip in a minute. But see, the problem, Elliot and Richard, is many of these black athletes and stuff, in regards to the sport, they have white agents. They have white handlers, white whatever, you know. And like you said, a lot of them got their head of white girls behind. So a lot of them brothers, when they go to tell their white agents that they had an encounter with the police and a white cop was disrespectful, called them a nigger, tell them to lie on the ground, put guns in their head. When they tell it to white agents, the white agents say, Gilbert, since y'all mentioned that handkerchief here from the Washington Wizards, Gilbert Arenas, Gilbert, don't make this a race thing. I know it's a shame what happened. Oh, the cop was wrong, Gilbert, but you go complain to the media, you're going to make it into a racial thing and everything. And them handkerchief red Negroes, like, that they listen to that stuff. That's why we never know about the untold incidents that happened to these brothers, because white agents start telling them to go to the media and everything like that, because you'll be labeled a troublemaker and stuff like that. So the brothers don't say anything. So that's why you only heard about high-profile incidents like Michael Bennett, because it was caught on camera and stuff like that. But for them other untold brothers and stuff to get stopped and guns pulled in their head, we may never know about them. For all we know, it may have happened to LeBron James. We don't know. You know what I mean? I'm sure if it did, LeBron probably would have said something by now. But I'm just saying, I think high-profile athletes like LeBron, and not LeBron specifically, but I'm sure high-profile black athletes like LeBron, they had guns in many cases drawn to their heads. But we may never know about them due to the fact that a lot of them got white agents and white people around them, so we may never know about that. And see, Ella, when you made that comment, Ella, you don't realize how truthful you was when you said about how white people like to dictate things. Now, remember when Jay came on last week and he talked about Michael Egg Dyson? He said how he said he might be the most flamboyant, or if you will, articulate guy. When he said today, because Jesse's getting older, He says that Al's getting old. He says that and Cornel West is getting older. He says right now Dyson might be the one. And I agree to a certain degree, even though I'm proud of Cornel West, because Dr. West was on, too, the other night on CNN. He stood up strong. He spoke strong on behalf of black people. But he has a point with Dyson, because, and I've had an issue with Michael A. Dyson, but I got to get a brother's due. He straightened this cracker out, Brother Richard and Brother Ellie. He was on with Anderson Cooper the other night, and this cracker he was a conservative Republican, some old devil from out of Louisiana somewhere, and he was saying how, you know, he thinks it's very, I agree with the president, how disrespectful these players are, these black players, when they disrespect our flag and all that this stuff, and how they, typical white people's gibberish, Ellie and Rich, you know how they, them devils talk. So anyway, Brother Dyson said, look, he said, sir, white people like you, y'all have a habit. He said, y'all are the same people that have brutalized black people, brought us from Africa, brutalized us, put us in chattel enslavement. He says, yet you're going to, you want to dictate to us how we're going to express the world, what way we should express our outrage, how we being treated by y'all, how we still being treated. He says, that's typical white racist. He said, only they want to brutalize you, had audacity to brutalize you, but then when you complain about it, they're going to tell you how to complain about it, if they want you to complain about it at all. And that's typical white people. That's why I say, Ellen Richard, when it comes to racism, talking about racism, some of these crackers, they don't have no problem talking about racism. They want to dictate the parameters of how it's going to be discussed. You understand what I'm saying, Brother Ellen Richard? Mm-hmm. They want to control how it goes. And that's, I guess, typical white people mentality and stuff. They want to dictate how, so the devil can sit down and say, well Mr. Booker or Mr. Richard, I'll sit down and we talk racism, but, you know, we got to have guidelines. You know, if we're going to discuss this racism, you know, you got to do it. You got to speak about it from my viewpoint. You can't just come out and accuse white people of racism and talk about our racist history. You know, we don't want to, you know, you can't just, you know, do it like it. We're going to talk about it. We got to soft shoe it. They don't use the exact words, but that's what they want to do. They want to be able to soft shoe it. So, in other words, so they'll sit there and say, oh, sure, George Washington had slaves, Ellet and Richard, but he wasn't quite a bad guy, though he pulled out the teeth of a black man and stuff when without any anesthesia, took the teeth, yanked the tooth out his brother and put them in his mouth. But I know that was a dastardly act that Washington did. But after all, Ellet and Richard, you can't take them away from me because he was the father of his country. He helped put the Constitution together. See, this is how them devils, they want to acknowledge these bastards was no good, but at the same time, they want to tell you that they still wasn't that bad of a people, even though Jefferson was a rapist and a pedophile. Hey, so what? I mean, that bygone, everybody got their faults and stuff, you know. But, you know, he was a pedophile. Hey, he was one of the founders of the Constitution. See, this is how white people do it. They want to dictate, and they want to make evil seem good and good seem evil. I mean, these people, these are some sick people. This is why it's so important, Ellie, that we never let these crackers control the narrative. You know what I'm saying, Ellen Richard? That's the key. We cannot let them control it, because that's their mindset and stuff. And this is why when you look long-term, and this is what Jay was saying when he was going with y'all, see, these devils see what's coming down the pipe. They see these young brothers, like Jay said, they see these young brothers watching these guys like Colin Kaepernick, Malcolm Jenkins, Michael Bennett, all these high-profile black, and they look at them, and they say, well, we don't stop these niggas and nip in the bud, we ain't going to be able to control these niggas 10 years from now. We got to nip this in the bud now. We got to put them niggas in their place. And see, in other words, Ellen Richard, they want to see these brothers act stupid, like when them brothers go to these clubs like on a night like this, making it rain in some damn white nightclub, or even if it's a black one, throwing money around, half-naked women, talking crazy, listening to that filthy gangster rap, you know, drinking 40s and all that stupid stuff, acting like a bunch of damn fools. This is how they want black athletes to act. They don't want black athletes to come into that sense of consciousness, knowing who they are. And this is why they try to nip this in the bud now, because they see if we don't put these niggas, see, not only Donald Trump, but many of these white races, NFL and space basketball, they say to themselves, we don't control these niggas, stop this now. We ain't going to be able to control these niggas 5 to 10 years from now. They're going to be out of pocket. And this is why they try to do all they can, the stymie any kind of dissent, you know, trying to stop any kind of protest. That's why it's so important, Ellen Richard, that we get behind these brothers and let them brothers know that we got their back, because we always forget, saying these black athletes should stand up and be counted. Well, damn if they stand up and be counted. We have an obligation as black men to stand up with these brothers, let them know they're out there by themselves, you know what I mean? Because these devils definitely going to be coming after them now, you know what I mean? And imagine if down with the athletes, Ellen Richard, imagine if some of these black rappers start becoming more and more conscious, start speaking out. Then they know them brothers, they'll start making records calling black women bitches and whores and all that stuff, and they'll start elevating the black woman up to be the queen that she is. They scared of that as well, because they know it's like wildfire. If it hit one sport, then it can go to the rap game, and these brothers start making more conscious rap now. So these devils saying, see the white man, like you said, Ellie, you're right. To these devils, they not reactionary. See, we reaction to their racism. We guys got to be put in a position of reaction. Because them devils plan ahead. They think ahead. They know what's coming down the pike. This is why they're trying to do all they can now, and that's why they even sending their house niggas out there to speak against these brothers. And one nigga that you need to
You can use something else, man. Come on, man. Go ahead.
I'm supposed to say, Elliot.
Nothing. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Elliot. No, I'm just going to say, Elliot, the one nigga that we need to isolate is this guy.
Good, that's good.
Owens. He's a former football player. You talking about a Negro. He put the house in Negro, brother. This is a despicable nigga. But say, trotting him out there now. They try to, you know, trash them brothers and stuff like that. And that's what they're going to do. They're going to get the Negroes out there to try to dog these brothers and stuff like that. Because, again, they see what's coming down the pike, Ellen Rich, and they want to stop this, man. They see what's coming down the pike now, man. So they want to stifle this now. Right? They want to stop and crush it right now. And Trump, like I said, Trump, that devil knows exactly what he was doing. When he spoke in Alabama, Ellen Rich, he knew who he was speaking to. He knew the state of Alabama with their history and stuff like that. So when he spoke to these people, he knew exactly what kind of reaction he was going to get. You know what I'm saying? Since all these devils don't do nothing without knowing what the impact going to be. You know what I'm saying? And then one more thing, Ellie, before I go, I'm so proud of Brother Asa Khalees, because as you know, he's going to be leading a protest. I think it's this weekend or next week. I forgot exact date. Outside that devil's home that murdered David Jones, because the FOP having a fundraiser for that devil, because the devil FOP president McNesby said, well, you know, since he lost his job, he don't have no money coming in for a while, so you know, we got to take care of him and stuff like that. You know what I mean? So they don't have this fundraiser with beef and beer and all of this stuff. But like Asa said, David Jones' family can't have nothing like that for him. He's not here to enjoy things like that. You know what I mean? But it just points out just the type of mindset you're dealing with. This man has shot two black men in the back, one fatal, one paralyzed, and yet they're going to have a fundraiser for this devil as if he's some kind of, you know, a victimized person. When he's been a murderer and an aggressor, but yet no kind of sense of respect or kindness or empathy for David Jones' family. That man got children left back here. He got his children's mother, whatever. He got a mother, whatever, back here. What about them? Nobody give a damn about their needs and stuff. You know what I mean, Elliot and Richard?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? You're right.
So, I mean, we see clearly what kind of mindset we're dealing with now. These people don't see us as human. So they continue to do this kind of stuff. And it's like I said, you put all this stuff together, Donald Trump and this attack on these athletes. You look at the police shootings of our people. It's all in the capsule. And now the last thing, you're right about the Korean president. These brothers, like you said, that's another reason why they might be against North Korea. They're against North Korea because they don't like the fact that he's going and getting these ex-NBA players like you said, Stephon Marbury, all them brothers going over to countries like North Korea making millions of dollars and stuff like that. That's another reason why they might got it in for Kim Jong. Because anybody that helped the black man, these crackers is against and stuff. Make no mistake about that. Anybody, it don't matter. Even if it's a white country or white person that help us, they go against them and stuff. That's their mindset. They, damn it, they not going to help us, and they want to see us continue being in agony and despair, but damn it, they not going to help us. They don't want nobody else to help us. That's why they killed Brother Gaddafi, and that's why they went after Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. See, their whole attitude is that we're not going to help, they're going to give you niggas nothing, but damn it, we ain't going to let nobody else help you either. We don't want nobody else to help you either. We want you to continue to be at the low end of the totem pole where we can kill you, mistreat you, have you on substandard housing and everything. That's their mindset, man. It's as clear as day. You know what I mean? So we know. So we got to know what we're dealing with and stuff, man. But again, I'm so proud of these brothers and stuff, Elliot. One taking a knee don't make the end. It's not the end all to everything, but it's the start. You know what I mean? You got to start somewhere in life. So I'm proud of them, bro. I encourage them brothers to take it to another level and stuff like that. Take it to another level and continue to do what they have to do, because the life they save as you well know, Brother Ellen Richard, with these police so out of control, the life they say may very well be their own. You know, Michael Bennett would be the first to verify that when them cops put them guns to his head and out in Las Vegas. So the life they say may very well be their own life.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Brother Ellen Richard. Y'all keep the good work, my brothers.
Right.
I know.
Richard, the Joe made reference to he mentioned a lot of things, but he made reference to some of these hip hop artists starting to change things that they're doing. The brother Nick Cannon that used to be hosting that show America Got Talent.
Mm.
If you notice, he's not on that show anymore.
Right.
Because he had started doing some activist things during the election and other stuff. He was out there on the street with other people. Then he started protesting a lot of these police killings. He appeared in Ferguson and other places, with the folks in the community.
Right.
Well, he made a hip hop song. I'll play it for the listening audience. And you'll see why he's not on that show, America Got Talent, anymore. I think they hired, what's the model's name? The tall black girl. Tyra Banks.
Oh, mm-hmm.
She took his place. If I can find this thing, I'll play it for the listening audience.
Stand for what? You want me to stand for a song that continues to remind me of all the harms that have done us wrong? Stand for what? For your army that none of our sons truly belong? Stand for what? The 100 years it took them to convince Congress to become the anthem after 40 failed attempts? Stand for what? Your forefathers who are really just pimps? Stand for what? A song about war, not freedom? That's how you want to lead them? Brainwashing your people? That's how you want to treat them? Slave masters' whips to cops' nightsticks. That's how you continue to beat them. Stand for what? The beginning of slavery in 1619? Or the end of those black Marines of 1814? That's really what the lyrics are about. They may have taken the word slave out, but they forgot to remove the slave connotations from their brains and their mouth. The mentality to make America greater than your imagination is how you pout. Hating because we burned down their White House. Gave proof to the night that is lights out. To that old elitist white supremacy thinking. Drunk off they ass with power at baseball games, singing and drinking. Man, stand for what? Stand for something or fall for dumb shit. Stand for what? To salute the red, white, and blue on a flag where my color's not reflected? Stand for what? To uphold laws that were embedded to have my community negatively affected? Stand for what? Your racist systemic melodies are mind-manipulating rhetoric? Did you know that the government pays sports organizations for plays to make people more patriotic? This MK Ultra soul control needs to stop it. I can still love my country and hate that fucked up song about rockets and bombs bursting in air. Reminds me of Charlottesville's vicious glares and police shootings with no care, like the dash cameras wasn't there. Stand for what? Monuments and statues of old slave masters? Constant reminders of our nation's disasters? The heroes in Houston, the doctors, the poets, the pastors. That's who I want to shape our greatness after. I honor and respect our men and women of service. But we've been taught to idolize wars without purpose. The majority of our military's casualties are all minority soldiers. So let's make statues for those warriors, because they surely deserve it. But Mount Rushmore was built by the Ku Klux Klan. So why in the fuck should I have respect for those men? Damn, this not my country and it's not yours either. Go back to Africa? I wish we never had to leave it. But the entire world is our neighborhood. So why do we perceive certain blocks to be bad and other blocks to be good? Instead of glorifying the past, we gotta focus on the future. Dick Gregory warned me if you speak up, they probably gonna shoot you. But I shout for his eternal voice along with Martin, Malcolm, and Marcus Garvey. And I march wholeheartedly for their legacy. Because I'll say it loud as you can see. Fuck Francis Scott Key and General Robert E. Lee. They don't represent me, and neither do either of these hypocritical political parties. I am a native of the cosmic and universal God energy. Even though the Constitution really don't apply to me, I'll try to exercise my freedom of speech. So you can tell them you heard it from me. Yeah, I said it. Brutality, historic fallacies, and all war is wrong. And so is that fucking song. It's been way too long. It's time to make a change and acknowledge that your home of the brave was built on the back of a slave. So bowing down to a true king is the only way to let freedom ring. Stand for what? I ain't standing for shit. Except Kaepernick.
Well, that's why he's not on America's Got Talent anymore. Well,
it is spreading, and as you say, that's why there's definitely some plan and some crowd control, population controlling discussions going on. But Elliot, you know, the thing is, our narrative has to move also beyond just describing what they're doing to defining what needs to be done, because that's the only way we can be able to give directions and advocate. And as, you know, Brother Joe say, support from, you know, and that's what Time for Awakening platform is doing, you know, advocating and supporting when those young men and women do make these moves, where they can go, how they can be able to get some direction and give direction to those now that they'll be 11, 10, 9, 8 years old of what they need to be doing compared to waiting and reacting when something happened to them.
I agree. Well, we'll look forward to Sunday.
Yes, sir.
Sunday's program. Early Sunday morning, 11 o'clock, you can catch Sister POC and her program Revive comes on 11 to 1 on Sunday. Again, new programs will be added that first week in October. African Perspectives with Brother Oshi on Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, 11 to 1. Practical Reality Think Tank. With Dr. William Rogers on Saturdays from 4 to 6, and Us Lifting Us, Ulu's program, which will be on Thursday evenings. I'm not sure the time, but you'll hear all of these programs announced constantly on the Time for Awakening format. You'll hear more about them coming up soon. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Sunday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
If you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon, or you're watching your children playing after school, they seem to be so unaware. I know the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children. Soon it will be their turns to try and save the world. Such a small part of Why can't we do something to try and solve them?
Children, to save the children.